You're listening to the Functional Nerds Podcast with your hosts, Patrick Hester and Tracy Townsend.
So Tracy, as you know, in my other life, my job is that I test software for a company in Denver. And I hate it when my work life bleeds over into my functional nerds life and I have to figure out why shit's not working.
It is. It's kind of rude. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like there should be boundaries.
Yep. There should be.
Oh, my God.
Damn it.
So, I have the opposite issue to you where, you know, you don't want that sort of overlap. On the other hand, like I revel in the overlap of things in my work life and things in my functional nerds life coming together. Because one of the things that when I said goodbye to my students on Friday that I got to say, which was true, was that, you know, that you should have a good weekend, you know, finals coming up next week, study hard, all of that. I'm going to go talk to Sean McGuire. And they were so like gobsmacked because they had just read some Sean and McGuire for the class a couple weeks prior. And they were like, no, you're not. You're lying. And so by the time this episode goes live, they will already be in my rearview mirror having graduated and moved on and all of that. But it's true, and I have proof because Seanan is here. Seanan, hello.
Hello.
Now I'm curious, there's always that one weird kid though, right? It's like I don't really care for Seanan McGuire stuff. I prefer Mira Grant.
Yeah.
And then have to tell them. You have to sit down and go, oh. Honey.
Yeah, that's a joke example, but that happens a couple times a year. I've literally had people when I was hired to write for an IP project be like, oh no, I like it. They should have gotten Mira if they were gonna get a science author. And I have to be like, okay, Mira is basically me in a light fugue state and a sugar high. Give me some pixie sticks and you can have Mira.
Right. Yeah. But I think that there's a sort of sweetness to those kinds of observations because what it means is it's kind of the strangest little backhand compliment because there's a meaningful enough difference in when you slide into your different writing personas that it becomes noticeable to readers. And so bravo you. Yeah. It's nice to be validated in that way. So in talking about writing for different IPs and who should get recruited in this case, Seanan McGuire did in fact get recruited for Strixhaven, which is your Magic the Gathering novel that came out in April. So congratulations.
Thank you.
So
I'm currently rocking a black and green deck on Arena, by the way, from Strixhaven.
Oh, very cool. What's your basic goal with it?
Yeah.
To win.
Right, but are you trying to make a lot of zombies? Are you trying to do a bunch of life drain? Are you?
I'm doing a lot of life drain.
Okay,
I'm doing
cool.
A lot of life drain. Yeah. I wasn't sure if I was going to like this set because I really enjoyed the turtles because I'm me.
That's fair.
But I'm enjoying it quite a bit. So, sorry, Tracy, and I know.
Oh yeah, go.
So, like, what's the book about?
The book is actually called Strixhaven Omens of Chaos. And okay. Omens of Chaos is sort of the more important subtitle because there are at this point four different available products that have Strixhaven at the front of them. There are two magic sets, Strixhaven School of Mages and then Secrets of Strixhaven, which just came out. There's a D&D supplement, Strixhaven, A Curriculum in Chaos. And now we have Strixhaven Omens of Chaos, which is the first print Magic the Gathering book since 2019. Mm. Now, this is not a Magic the Gathering podcast, so very short recap of recent multiversal events. Phyrexia, which is basically the world of evil machine Nazi zombies, managed to get out across the rest of the multiverse and caused a very brief war that we call the Phyrexian Invasion, which had a death toll in incalculable millions and trashed a bunch of planes. But they got stopped because otherwise we wouldn't have a multiverse to play with anymore. And now it's been several years, and the people who didn't die when the Phyrexians came are trying to put their lives back together. For the University of Strixhaven on the plane of Arcavios, this is including recruiting students from other planes. They're putting together their first ever multiversal cadre of students because they lost half the student body. they need people in seats, or else their teachers won't have anything to do and tenure starts becoming questionable. And, you know, it's a functioning university needs people to teach. So they are recruiting from across planes. Our first point of view character, we have five of them, but our first point of view character is Eula Blue, a young black-white shield mage from the plane of Capenna. She grew up in the city of New Capenna, which is the only city remaining on the plane, and it was severely damaged in the invasion. So her home plane no longer has a university that can teach her how to use her magic. So when, you know, Strixhaven says, hey, come here, she comes there. Mm-hmm. And as she's coming, she picks up the rest of her cadre. We have five transplanar students. We get to spend some time at Strixhaven and really dig into the university in a way that there isn't time for in the web fiction. So yeah. What is it? It's about 364 pages long, and it is the most fun I've had in a while.
That's awesome.
And I want to dig into that because I think that there is there's a variety of reasons why really accomplished authors with their own creative and intellectual property work in IP. But for the more fortunate ones, it's not just because they get the offer, but because they get the offer from something that they are already very much in love with, very much invested in. And that is definitely you with magic. And so what makes Omens of Chaos for you a particularly fun project?
So I started playing Magic the Gathering when I was in high school. You were saying there are a lot of reasons that authors write IP. The reason I write Magic the Gathering, other than they'll let me, is that as long as I am writing for Magic the Gathering as a business IP, my cards are tax deductible. And this is a game changer for me in a budgetary sense. Like, seriously, I will work for Magic forever because it makes my cards so much more reasonable. And as any Magic player can tell you, we spend a lot on cards. It's most of my disposable income. You don't find a lot of Magic the Gathering players who do hard drugs because we just can't afford it.
No, you know,
the money's not there.
It's all hard work.
But the previous Magic the Gathering, there have been Magic the Gathering novels when I was in high school. I read them. I enjoyed them. They were one of the things that I held out to myself as someone who wanted to be an author. If you're really famous, you get to do this. That is not necessarily how licensed IP is always viewed, but I was an interesting child. However, the most recent Magic the Gathering novel before this was in 2019. The War of the Spark novels by Greg Weisman were such a cataclysmic failure with the community that they are largely viewed as having killed magic print fiction for several years.
Wow.
If people are going to be mad about it and it's going to cause you backlash and it's not increasing your profits by that much, why would you bother? So as soon as they brought me on to write short fiction, I started agitating for books, and I started presenting all sorts of different ways that we could do books without falling into that same War of the Spark pit. Ways that it would work, ways that it would enhance our community, ways that it would make magic players both new and deeply invested happy. And so for me, what made Omens of Chaos so great was I successfully bullied Hasbro, the corporation that owns everything I love, into doing what I wanted.
It must feel like you won like a hostage negotiation.
A little bit. I'm not kidding when I say Hasbro owns everything I love. They own Magic the Gathering, they own Dungeons and Dragons, and they own My Little Pony. And those three things are 80% of my personality on any given day.
We have had conversations like this, not the 80% of the personality piece of it per se, but between Patrick and myself. And Hasbro is definitely a company that can make things challenging for people who love work. I mean, they create the things, they sustain the things that people love. But it's really, it's complicated. And I think I'll just leave it there in the interests of keeping the episode friendly to all involved. For me, one of the things that I think is really kind of exciting about getting to hear you kind of pitch the Omens of Chaos idea is that it's kind of digging into a lot of things that you have a ton of experience with and a ton of skill with. We have a boarding school for people who are uniquely qualified and gifted in some particular area. In this case, we've got magic. We have this sort of multiversal experience and how that draws together tons of different sort of world building angles. And I guess for the extension of that, for me, like turning it into a question is like, for you, is it more fun to come up with the idea that becomes something like Omens of Chaos or to actually like kind of dig into the writing itself?
Ideas take 30 seconds. Writing takes more than 30 seconds. So really the writing is where the big fun happens.
Yeah.
Throughout Omens of Chaos, I was keeping a file which was titled Decisions I Have Made That Are Now Your Problem. And that just listed out every little thing that I had declaratively stated about a plane. Mm-hmm. You know, this is a popular coffee drink in New Capenna. This is what they call bedtime stories on Chandelar. And just listing out all of these little things that, if they were not removed by Wizards of the Coast's editorial, would now be magic canon. And so those are magic canon. And a lot of them are so small that I don't think anyone is ever going to think to contradict it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I have an idea. And you tell me how crazy this is. Limited edition of the book. Very limited edition. And the back of the book is a commander that you could use.
Like you just play the book. Like
come on, this is marketing gold right here. This sells Seanan's book. It sells the cards. There's a limited edition commander that you can't get anywhere else that's on the back cover of that book. And you put that book into play and that's your commander for your commander deck. Come on.
That would in fact be hilarious, but I'm pretty sure it would not be play legal because you couldn't shuffle that into your deck if in fact forced you.
You'd have a token that you say this represents my commander. And that goes
that's
in
fair.
And that's the only one you have.
I guess.
Yeah, that said, you know, the first edition of the book did come with an exclusive command tower.
Nice.
Which is a very common commander staple. There have been like 30 printings of it. And people were grumbling when it was announced that it would be a command tower, that it wasn't a better card. Why are they not printing it with something really rare and exclusive like they did the first couple of Magic books back in the 90s?
Yeah.
So as of right now, you would have to pay more to get just that command tower than you would to get a copy of the book with the command tower inside.
Wow.
Wow.
So I don't think that putting a better card in the book would have sold more copies. It would have just upset the Magic the Gathering speculators more.
I've gotten really involved with the Pathfinder Society. Mm-hmm. And I've been doing a lot of GMing. And when I started with them, they basically introduced me to this new game store that's 10 minutes from my house. It had just opened. And it's fascinating to me to see the economics of these game stores and how, you know, Magic is huge to keep them going. Magic, Pokemon, there's like a couple of other card games that they're running as well. And that just trips me out. So when you talk about the community, like the community is very vocal, very huge. I know that they're into the lore stuff, so I can't imagine that this book wouldn't like hit a strong chord with them, right?
That was our hope, but the community is also very bruised after War of the Spark and very kind of hesitant to trust anything coming out in print like that. So we had to be very careful in our approach, make sure people understood that we were not contradicting previous lore. We were not trying to erase anything, but we also were not War of the Sparking again.
Gotcha.
Yeah, that's really... Fandoms are a beautiful thing, but they can also be like like a bit of a feral thing.
Oh,
they
yeah.
get skittish. They get bitey. They get very territorial. I don't know if you've ever yourself as a fan had that kind of like skittish, bitey, territorial feeling about.
Oh, absolutely.
Something. Yeah. Yeah. I grew up, you know,
it's collecting. Called Star Trek, Tracy.
Right.
It's called sure. Star Trek. And everybody needs to leave it alone that, yeah. because it's perfect.
I got my skittish, bitey feels as a fan out in the 90s collecting and reading Marvel comics, which was a hell of a time to be collecting and reading Marvel comics.
No, but, it's not. Know. I mean, you could get 27 different versions of the same comic book with different covers. That was like a great.
Yeah, that's that is certainly part of it.
One of them would have some sort of hologram on it. Holograms are cool.
Yeah, there are those holograms.
And if you put them all together, you'd get like
and one all of them would have Wolverine. Poster.
Yes, Wolverine would be
they would
somewhere
all have Wolverine,
yeah.
all yeah. have Wolverine, and multiple different potential origin stories of varying degrees of contradictions about and so on. Yep, yeah. So,
sometimes they couldn't fit Wolverine on, so they had Patch instead.
Sometimes. It's been interesting for me because I have a Marvel Unlimited subscription that actually my son mostly uses at this point. And he's been reading all the way back to the 70s and Jack Kirby stuff and so on up through the present and just kind of jumping around in different timelines. And so it's been really interesting absorbing his experience of fandom in this way that's like totally disconnected from the zeitgeist of whatever fans were talking about at the time having to do with these things. Mm-hmm. And it's made me think a lot about the moments as a fan that something made me kind of stabby or something made me kind of frustrated and wondering how much of it was like legitimately rooted in there is a deficiency in this story or there is this creates some kind of problem and how much of it is just like me absorbing the angst of the moment that surrounds me. I don't know if you've had an analogous kind of experience before, Seanan, of trying to disaggregate your own feelings from the feelings of the masses.
I all the frickin' time because I am very passionate about the things that I am currently focused on. The way that I am mm-hmm. able to get as much done as I do is I just kind of jump myself from extreme focus to extreme focus. And so I generally will have very passionate opinions about whatever is going on. And a thing that I have discovered is that frequently, according to the masses, I am wrong. But as far as I am concerned, I am right. And that'll be because you have group consensus usually that female characters are not as interesting as male characters. Or that men can make mistakes and be forgiven, whereas female characters who make mistakes are villains forever. And so I spend a lot of time very angrily defending women that have made bad choices in canon as if they were real people and picking fights for myself, mm-hmm. and it's fun. But, you know, I mentioned My Little Pony. There was a very successful My Little Pony reboot a couple years ago, Generation 4, Friendship is Magic. And there are yeah. a remarkable number of people that act as if Friendship is Magic is all that matters. Like it was the start. There's mm-hmm. this TV show on VH1 called The Toys That Made Us, which yeah. is supposedly about toys from the 80s and 90s and their cultural impact. And for the My Little Pony episode, more than half of it was focused on Lauren Faust, the creator of Friendship is Magic, and how Friendship is Magic has affected the modern culture. They barely mentioned Bonnie's, I have just forgotten her name because I'm so annoyed. Bonnie Zacherly, who created My Little Pony in the first place. There is no Lauren Faust without Bonnie Zacherly, but she got completely cut out of the episode about her own franchise because she is not new and hot and connected to the bronies. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, yeah, no, I spend a lot of time very angry and then have to remember my blood pressure and bring it back down again.
Fandom is the universal tester of blood pressure, it seems.
It is. And, and you know, having gotten the opportunity to talk to Seanan quite a bit over through the years, you came up through fandom. Like that's where you got your
I did.
Everything. Like you were part of conventions and everything. So like you've seen kind of both sides, both as the like being on the fanish side and then, you know, being on the author side.
I still am a part of fandom. I attend multiple conventions for myself every year, as well as the ones that I attend to work. And I did have to stop attending a convention that I had always very much enjoyed. And I feel very arrogant saying this, but I would go to the convention and I would try to be a part of the community as I had always done. And suddenly things that I had literally been doing around these people since I was 16 were me being arrogant and rude. You know, oh, Shannon walked out of the room just as I was getting my turn to sing. She must hate me. She must she's a snob. No. And it's like, well, no. But also I would be in an audience listening. Mm-hmm. And folks who knew I was in there and effectively captive would come up and start to try to talk to me or ask me to sign their books or whatever. And I would be the one that got in trouble because the only common denominator in all of these incidents was me.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, yes, that is true, but I didn't do anything but exist.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's rough. That's rough. Because it's really on them because you're there for the same reason they are, which is, you know, to enjoy the convention and to listen to whoever's up on the podium or whatever, you know, talking.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's hard. That's hard. Yeah. I didn't know that was happening. I'm sorry. That sucks.
It only happened at a few conventions that were focused on a specific subculture of fandom. And I just stopped going, you know, we do as we must do.
Sure.
Yeah. I think one of the things about fandom, which can be so cool, is its ability to bring creators in proximity to their fans. And that's great. But I think that one of the things that sometimes does, in combination with the really passionate and even like proprietary feelings that fans develop about the stuff that they love so much and that they care so much about, is this confusion about, like, you are this kind of Schrodinger's box human being, right? Where on the one hand, you are a producer of stuff and your function is to produce the stuff that they love. And therefore any interaction they have with you is with you as producer of stuff and therefore is in the capacity of what your job is supposed to be. But at the same time, because they're trying to interact with you, there's this Shannon as person, and now I have access to Shannon as person. But it's only... It's in how they initiate these interactions versus what you're trying to experience for yourself that we get this kind of collision of you can't be both things for them at the same time.
Do wind up having to leave some spaces. I am only on one local game store Discord at this point because in one of them, somebody figured out who I was and started basically coming into the Magic the Gathering lore discussion channel trying to trick me into saying things that he could then insist were canon because he had heard them from one of the creators.
That's weird.
It's like there are strict rules on what I am and am not allowed to talk about. I have gone through media training, and Discord is a form of media. But also, if every word I say is going to be met with hostility and the equivalent of a nerd fight in an alley, I'm just going to go.
Yeah.
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 Yeah, that's just someone being stupid. That is just someone being stupid. But you know what? I don't want to go down this too far, but no. It's the thing I always talk about. It's the anonymity of being online, right? If you're not sitting there staring at someone in the face, like, that you can be a dick, which is just stupid and wrong. Anyway, I still think it's awesome that you have this book and that you're able to do this and you're able to do something in a space that you enjoy. Now, it sounded like you are still collecting Magic cards and playing Magic the Gathering. Is that correct? Like, in person?
Yep. I play a ridiculous amount of Magic the Gathering in person. Mostly I'm playing a format called Commander right now.
Okay.
Which is what we used to call kitchen table Magic. You can play with cards from all across Magic's history. You build a 100-card deck that is completely unique, you know, only one of each card in it except for basic lands. And then you beat on each other for a couple hours.
Yeah.
And I like Commander because it is a slower-paced way of playing. I don't really enjoy the pace of modern standard play.
Okay.
It's just way too fast for me. And that is because getting a Magic the Gathering game to actually start outside of a tournament situation is kind of like getting a D&D table to get started. Get them all seated. It still takes 10 minutes for everyone to stop talking about their day and actually begin playing.
Yeah. It's funny because I don't play in person anymore. I just do Arena. Mm-hmm. And so I do Alchemy.
Okay.
In Arena. But my friend, a good friend of mine, Adam, he prefers the Brawl format, which I haven't even messed with at all. But he plays in person, and he does like the Friday Night Magics and all that kind of good stuff. Mm-hmm. I am just at a point now where I spend so much money on Pathfinder and role-playing game stuff that I don't have any money left over for Magic.
Yeah,
and that is fair. We all have to make our choices budgetarily. Some people choose to have children, which are very expensive. Sure. I choose to have a large collection of revised dual lands, and mine aren't ever going to go to college. So yeah.
I also buy a lot of dice.
Oh, I love those Chessex dice mimics. Yeah.
As I'm showing that on the video that no one else can see. I went to this new game store and we had our first ever society, and it was the first time I'd ever played been a GM as a Pathfinder society. And so I bought these for everybody at my table.
Aww.
And gave them out, the little mimic dice. Yeah, so that was my...
We don't talk about my dice situation.
I had to stop with the metal.
Oh, yeah.
Because they're so freaking heavy.
My poison of choice is not metal. It is the sharp-edged resin.
Oh, yeah, those are good too. Yeah, I have some nice ones like those.
So, Shannon, would you consider yourself more of a dice dragon or a dice goblin?
I am definitely a dice goblin. The dice dragons are better about keeping things very nice and organized and knowing exactly what they have. My friend Alec is a dice dragon. I just have dice everywhere. I commission dice. I am not super picky about what dice I bring into my home, although I have a major weakness for dispel dice, and I'm currently trying to track down the Kickstarter sets that I missed.
There's a thing in Pathfinder called the Hero Point. And the hero point is you can turn those into re-roll if you don't think you did a good roll. And but there is a rule. And the rule is if you turn that in to re-roll, you don't use that same fucking die.
Oh, no.
And I have seen people do that, and I think they're insane. It's no. You have to that dice is cursed. That D20 is cursed. You need to get a different one. So, Tracy, we're running out of time. Do you want to do picks of the week?
For sure. Let's do it.
We'll get to picks of the week. Just hold your horses. We'll get there. Before we do, I wanted to talk to you for just a second about $5. I know. You're shaking your head now. Look, they say that $5 doesn't go as far as it used to, and they're kind of right. Can you get a cup of coffee for $5 these days? Some of you are saying yes, like a black coffee, right? You could get a small black coffee probably for $5 somewhere, but you're not going to be able to get one of the fancy ones with the stuff in it. Shot of this, shot of that. Those are going to cost you a lot more. So that $5 is not going to get you that. But you know what? There's a place where you can get a ton of value for just $5 a month, and that is patreon.com/functionalnerds. Let me break it down for you. $5 a month and you gain access to things like our super secret Facebook group, which has been going on forever, our brand new and popular so far, I'm enjoying it, a lot of other people are enjoying it, but our brand new Discord server, which is also super secret. Can't get there from anywhere else. You have to be a patron of the Functional Nerds to get there. You get a monthly video hangout. And those are really cool. That's me and Tracy host. And the patrons like you, if you become one, get to hang out with us. And we all chat. And we talk about the things that are going on in the world and have a little bit of a nerdy conversation. We talk about books sometimes and movies and other things. So you get that for $5. And on top of all of that, one of our most popular things that listeners absolutely love, you get the Patreon exclusive episode of the pod that we call Just Us. That is just me and Tracy talking about stuff. And by the way, if you joined today, you would get all the back episodes of that, I believe, which is kind of cool. And that's all for $5 a month. I mean, come on. What are you waiting for? Head over to patreon.com/functionalnerds and help us keep the lights on and keep this thing we call the Functional Nerds Podcast rolling on. While you do that, you don't have to like pull your earbuds out or stop listening. We're just going to jump right into the other thing that listeners really, really love. It's called Picks of the Week.
Fantastic. So, Patrick, what is your pick for this week?
My pick is very on point and on topic with what we're doing. So at my last Pathfinder session, I essentially had four newbies that I was teaching how to play the game. And my fellow GM came over to me and he said, "Hey, I've got a present for everybody from another player who had 3D printed these things." And I did not even know that these things existed. This is a 3D printed life counter. And I'm going to show it in the video. This is pretty neat. And you just turn the little dials on it. And I guess you can get these patterns anywhere. If you've got a 3D printer, you can look online and you can get them. But what's cool is he did the Pathfinder Society logos on the side and the Starfinder Society logo on the other side, which I thought was really, really neat.
Big counter barrel there.
Yes, it looks like a barrel, and it's got the counters, and you just basically you set your HP at the start of the game, and as you lose or gain, and you could use this for magic, you can use this for D&D, you can use Pathfinder, whatever game you're playing that you have a HP for. You can buy these on Etsy, you can buy the 3D pattern online or get it for free probably somewhere and print them yourselves. And it's just really, really neat. And he gave us a bunch of those and we handed them out to everybody. So that's my pick this week. I thought it was pretty neat.
That is cool. All right. So Seanan, what has brought you joy recently? What's your pick?
I'm going to say How to Survive Camping by Bonnie Quinn. It's a new book series. The first two are out. The Man with No Shadow and the Lady in Chains. And then the third one will be coming out next year. And they are just absolutely delightful. But in a new way to come up through fandom, rather than starting out as fan fiction, the How to Survive Camping books began as Reddit stories. They were on the subreddit /NoSleep. So you may have encountered some of these because they've been floating around the internet for years. Well, Bonnie Quinn was able to get a publishing contract, pull them offline, and clean them up and refine them for publication. Nice. And they are freaking delightful. The Man with No Shadow was probably the best book I've read in the last year. And I've read some bangers in the last year, but it made me happy enough that I not only blurbed it immediately, I demanded arcs of the next ones and have been just happily chewing my way through this this little campground, which is beset by eldritch creatures, and everyone there is probably going to get eaten soon.
I mean, and honestly, what more could you ask for in a camping experience?
Not a hotel. Much.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, I mean, spoil sport. So my pick for this week is a game that I actually played with my students. I have played this game before with folks in my house, but it worked particularly well for a last class meeting experience for a group of my students this week. It's produced by Fantasy Flight Games. It's called I, Dark Overlord. I as in like A-Y-E, like yes, sir. The premise of the game, it's one of those sort of social interaction kind of games, is that one player is Rigor Mortis, the Dark Lich Overlord. The other players are all the hapless goblin minions who have been sent away by Rigor Mortis to go do crap in his name. Raise a village, steal a artifact, etc., etc. The types of things one does in a Dungeons & Dragons Pathfinder-ish kind of thing. And of course, because the other players are all hapless, feckless goblins, they have returned empty-handed and have screwed up the mission. The premise of the game is that all of the goblin players are trying to beg for mercy and pin the failure of the mission on everybody else so that rigor mortis will punish them and not, you know, punish someone else and not them. It's one of those games where one person loses and everybody else wins because they didn't get killed by the Lich. And so there is a sequence of cards which are used as storytelling elements. There's a sequence of cards that are either pointing fingers, like literally pointing to a different player to pass the buck, or open hands and a kind of stop freeze where you can interrupt other people's storytelling jaunts. And of course, for the person portraying the Lich rigor mortis, there is a sequence of cards that represent the glare. If you glare at a player three times over the course of the game, then they have been effectively murdered by your disapproval and the game ends. So I had teams of my students begging for their life for having failed to get me the magical dark pony princesses in one particular mission. And when that went particularly terribly, I decided to throw them a softball and see if they could just please go to the City of Light and get me a pie. And needless to say, that went very badly as well. But it's a great deal of fun. There's actually a couple different ways of playing it, the way that I described to you, and a way that involves like a little bit more rules heavy stuff with points accrual and so on. But honestly, in the easier way that I have described, you can pick up the game in about 2 minutes and just have a rollicking good time with your nerd pals. So excellent. I would check out iDark Overlord.
Nice.
All right. So we have had a lovely time chatting with you, Sean, and thank you so much for geeking out with us about the things that you love. We always appreciate your time. So you are in the midst of a very busy spring and summer here. Where can people find you and the super cool things that you are afoot with?
Online, I am mostly on Blue Sky and Tumblr. Mm-hmm. If you can spell my name, you can find me there. Beyond that, I am going to be heading to Ohio at the beginning of June. I'm at Big Ohio Con on Saturday, June 6th. Following that, I will be at Main Street Books in a city in Missouri. Where is Main Street Books?
I think it's in
itinerary here.
I think it's in Missouri.
St. Charles, Missouri.
Okay.
So that will be on Monday the 8th.
And if you're from that state, it's in St. Charles, Missouri.
Important. Well, I am not from that state, so it's in St. Charles, Missouri. Then mid-June, I am at SoonerCon in Indiana, the 19th, 20th, and 21st. And then I'll be at the American Library Association Conference in Chicago on the 25th through the 29th. I am not going to see my cats for most of a month. So after that, we get San Diego Comic-Con. It's going to be a party.
I was actually when we've been having some issues, technical issues. But when your video was on, I had a moment because something moved behind you and I didn't realize it was a floof.
Oh.
And I was like, oh, that's a floof. Okay.
Yes. Yeah, we're not about to see Shannon get murdered by the serial killer that came into her house because she left her door unlocked to let her D&D group come in while she was doing this recording.
Yes. Mm. So I will throw out there, we have a patron in Ohio, Todd. Todd, we expect you to go and see Shannon and buy her book and get it signed at the convention. And then in Chicago, Canoli Joe, you're going to have to go do the same thing. So I'm putting that out there for our patrons. You guys need to go and say hello to Shannon for us.
Come say hi.
Yeah.
I get lonely.
Exactly.
And also really, really bored.
Bring her some magic cards.
Well, thank you for making our world a little less boring, Shannon.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm going to go play D&D now.
Nice.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode or any of our episodes, please, please consider sharing it with your friends on social media and give us a like or some stars on the platform or the podcatcher that you're listening to us on. Those likes help with the nasty little algorithm so new people can find us when searching for good stuff to listen to. If you'd like to keep up with the Functional Nerds on social media, the official podcast socials are as follows. At the-functional-nerds on Facebook, at functionalnerds_podcast on Instagram. Shut up. I couldn't get the same one. It just didn't work that way. So hush. And you know what? It's going to get worse here. And at thefunctionalnerds.bluesky, which is BSKY.social. I know, I couldn't keep a cup aesthetic. I tried, but hush. Tracy and I have our own accounts. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and Blue Sky. You can find us by searching, if you want me, it's ATFMB, because that's just my handle everywhere I go. Or you can search for Tracy Townsend and find Tracy on social as well. Our Patreon helps keep the lights on, and new episodes like this one coming out week after week, which we've been pretty good at. I mean, we're very consistent, so you might consider checking us out over at patreon.com/functionalnerds just to support the pod and help us out there, you know? It does help. Thanks again for listening. And I have one question for you before I go. Is it baseball season yet?
Mr. Carpiers.
You got it right. How about that?
Yeah.
You can call me Cannoli Joe.
Hello, Cannoli Joe.
If you've never listened to the podcast, there's two different styles here. There's Tracy, who does prep work and comes up with some very thoughtful questions. And then, oh, squirrel.
Oh, for God's sake. Patrick Louise.
Hello, Patrick. It is I, Clayface.
Okay. That's probably a good enough signal.
When someone comes up to me and says, hey, I really love what you do, I'm like, I'm sorry. Do you know who I, like, I think you have me confused with someone else.
The whiz bang and the gosh wow and the sense of wonder stuff.
My favorite thing about time travel is I actually had a time travel joke for you guys, but you didn't like it.
I'm so excited.